It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and thank you for listening to octalkradio.net. If you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com, and be sure while you're there to check out our archives to listen to some of our past guests. You know, at The Coaching Perspective, we've been coaching executives and business owners for 18 years. Effective teams is our primary focus. We work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. In all cases, the goal is to increase the productivity of the team and the individual member. We also offer individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position, coaching for people who want to sharpen their business skills, and communication workshops. Well, let's get to today's guest. Our guest for today is Sandra Davidson. Sandra works in the area of intervention and recovery coaching. She works with families and clients that are in crisis from addictions. Sandra, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Thank you very much, Doug.
It's a pleasure to have you with us today. Well, look, why don't we start right out and tell our audience about your path to your current business model. What did you do before what you're doing now?
Okay. Well, in the beginning, basically, I actually worked as an executive. I trained and also mentored sales staff and kind of in the technology area. And then I kind of went through my own personal transition and actually moved into being trained as a life coach and then started working with individuals. In the interim, I had actually got a certification in alcohol and drug counseling. And I'm now kind of using those tools that I've learned about recovery and working with people that need to get into recovery and recover from addictions. And then from there, I pretty much have gone into kind of a new area. It's a new area in recovery itself because we're actually coaching our clients in terms of once they do get sober or helping them get sober and then looking at, you know, their life in a whole different manner and then coaching them through the process.
Sandra, you mentioned, what was your certification? I didn't get that.
Oh, I have a certification for an alcohol and drug counselor. It's through the state of California.
And how does work as an alcohol and drug counselor differ from work as a coach with the same kind of client?
Well, there are some similarities in terms of actually learning to identify the disease, then getting tools in terms of working with people that are in recovery, and basically rediscovering their lives or creating a new life for themselves. The same process really takes place in terms of asking powerful questions, having the recovery client look at what's going on in their life that has led them to the situation they're in, and then looking at some of the areas of focus in their life that they have not taken care of themselves. If I'm working with a coaching client, let's say, as opposed to recovery coaching, we're always going to look at the foundation in terms of their spiritual foundation in their life, looking at their health issues, looking at their relationships with people around them, their family, their friends, their employers, and then pretty much then creating a new path or a new vision for themselves in terms of how their life has unfolded for them. So, you know, there's a lot of similarities in the sense that you actually are going to, you know, to talk to them about their addiction, but also rebuild their lives and a new way of thinking in terms of how they create a new path for themselves.
So, okay. So what attracted you to coaching then?
Well, what attracted me to coaching was is that I was kind of winding down my career, and I was looking for just a new venue, and I'd worked with executives for a long time, and I was very impressed. I started to go to the International Coaching Federation's meetings, business meetings, and saw coaches kind of basically do their type of coaching, and then I thought, well, you know what? It might be interesting to try to look at how the schools were structured, and then I went ahead and signed up and took a 12-month course with accomplishment coaching and learned, you know, a different way of approaching clients and also doing a lot of my own work internally to be able to coach people.
Okay. And you said you were in the business world prior to this. So
yes.
how did your, I mean, tell us, what was your business experience and how did that help you or did it play a role in your counseling and in your coaching?
Well, it did play a huge role in the sense that I wanted to help people utilize their skills and evaluate where they were in their lives. I mean, when I was working in the business environment, I mentored a lot of people because I saw people that had potential, but they kind of stayed in the same place and didn't think outside the box other than what they were doing with their work, such as a salesperson. And, you know, when I did mentor them, and I have a great skill set as it is, just to be able to draw people out, to share a little bit about what they're going on with them, and to be able to, you know, put some ideas and dreams out there. And I've always had the skill set to be able to sit down and say, okay, well, how does that look if, let's say, you want to make a change here, if you want to, you know, expand your horizons, if you want to go back to school, and what are those steps that you need to take to get there? So I was probably doing coaching a long time ago before I even really recognized what the concept of coaching is. I mean, we live in a world today that everybody can use the term coaching, but I think that it takes a kind of unique skill set to be able to be intuitive in terms of what people are communicating, be a good listener, and also just to be a good support system for them to kind of reflect back what a particular individual wants to do in terms of maybe, you know, changing their life or changing situations around them or enhancing their relationships with people.
And you know, I think you bring up a good point. You make a good point, and that is that you were coaching before you called it coaching. And I think so many coaches have found themselves in the same position. I mean, there are a lot of skills that we either sharpen or learn in becoming certified or trained as a coach. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that just naturally sort of have many of those skills themselves and use it. So I think you make a very good point there about maybe always having been a coach.
I think so. I think you have to have a genuine interest in people's welfare and just being able to be a good listener to hear them. I mean, we spend a lot of time communicating with each other in many, many venues today, not just, you know, face-to-face, and there's many different ways of communicating, but a lot of times we're never heard. And I think that, you know, you have to kind of develop that skill, maybe, you know, younger, or it's just as there in terms of how, you know, how you were raised. So, you know, I think that we all want to be heard, and we want to all be acknowledged for what we do and support each other in terms of especially if you want to make some major changes in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, look, you started to tell us about your business, but tell us, you know, a little more detail about your business. You know, how do you find your clients? What is sort of the role as a counselor that you go through with them, and do you have a model that you kind of use for that?
Well, I use a model in terms of my intervention because I have two pieces of my business here, and one of my major pieces of business is doing interventions, and my clients come from treatment centers, sober living facilities, even emergency rooms for that matter if there's a referral on that, where someone is in crisis and they need to go into treatment. Intervention is kind of a process, and I do what we call the love model, so that a family is concerned about a family member who seems to be doing something in excess that's destroying their lives and the lives around them. And essentially, the process is that I interview the family first, and then there's a determination that there needs to be an intervention, and then I basically work with the family to create a structure so that they can approach the client and, you know, basically tell them that they love them, they care about them, and they're very concerned about their behavior and what their destructive life is, what destruction is going on in their life. And essentially, then there's a, from that process, the client says, yes, they'll go. And then there's usually a treatment center that's set up, and then that person is placed into the treatment center. Part of my intervention process is that I do a follow-on process, and that's where I do a lot of the recovery coaching part of it. So once they go into treatment, then I will check in them on a weekly basis and then continue with them after they leave the treatment center. So back to the model again is that I most people that go into treatment pretty much have beaten themselves up mentally already, and they don't really need the people around them telling them just how bad they're acting. What, you know, what we all want for our loved ones is to be happy and healthy and to have good relationships with everybody. And when those relationships are being destroyed by their behavior, the family pretty much will, let's say, compose a note and then read it to the client to let them know how they love them, how they care about them, and what they're seeing in terms of what's happening to them. So, you may have seen intervention on the televisions, and there's been different programs, and I like the softer way because I think that person is hurting so much, and they need to know that they're really being validated and understand that they're in as much pain as they are.
Now, you know, you deal in a situation that's so different from coaching in the sense that in coaching, we're usually directly hired by the client who wants to be coached. And if they don't feel like they're getting what they need out of the coaching relationship, they walk away from it and end it. But I'm assuming in an intervention situation, your client, you're typically not hired by the person that you are counseling. You may be hired by the family, that's a question, and that many times the first take doesn't hold. So can you talk to us about those two issues?
Well, the family is the one that does hire them. But part of the process that I do is that I also will take the client to detox and will spend the night with the client to make sure that they're being cared for medically and emotionally. And one of the things that I strive for very much in doing the intervention is that I am sort of a mediator in terms of, you know, supporting the client but also supporting the family and to get an understanding of what's going on. Now, I really have never had anybody turn me away because I then ally myself with the client and then kind of be their guide in terms of what the process is. I'm also the kind of go-to person from them and also the family to kind of create some communication. I'm actually, when we first put a client in a treatment program, we pretty much don't have to communicate with the family for at least a week or so, just kind of a cooling off period of time so that the person's in recovery and they have nothing else that they have to focus on or actually communicate with the family until later on. There are other people that are part of that process in terms of recovering. So they're going to be meeting with therapists and doctors and other individuals and going to meetings. So I'm, you know, part of what I do, I'm an adjunct to all those other things that are going on and also kind of being part of their team of part of their recovery process. So it's not just, it's like we are going to do a one-on-one and this is what we're going to do through the whole process. There are many people that touch a person once they get into treatment and afterwards, too, and the family is brought into this also at some point.
I'm trying to think of a tactful way of putting this, but so forgive me if I don't make it.
Okay.
You know me, and you know I don't. That's not my strong suit. But talk to us about how big a problem this really is for society. I mean, you know, you're seeing on a regular basis something that most of us maybe don't experience at all or maybe only experience remotely, you know, sort of partially removed. Where are we going with this? Does this system really work? What's happening?
You mean as far as the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction and all the other other things that wrap around it? We've got eating disorders. We've got gambling. We've got addiction to being online. Anything that we get distracted from our lives is what pretty much can turn into an obsessive compulsive behavior to distract ourselves. This, I just came from the U.S. Journal Conference, which was a couple weeks ago in Newport Beach. And this is for addiction specialists and therapists. And the statistics are staggering in a sense that this is an industry that's growing and is going to continue to grow. Because the consequences of not recovering is death because of all of the different things that people do to themselves and have the ability to do to themselves to create harm and sickness and illness to themselves. And unfortunately, in this whole area of recovery, our age ranges are going downward so that the average age of a client that we see maybe 18 to 25, I'm now seeing it even move downward to 15 to 25. That's the bulk of the age range that we have people that come into recovery. And they may not on their first try complete the program or this may not stick to them. It's a severe situation. I just went to a recovery program today to review what they do, and I met somebody that actually has been in 13 programs. And,
wow.
Yeah, and she's a young gal. And it's an unfortunate situation that this is the norm of the younger people, too, because it doesn't stick. So this, you know, I mean, if we talk about job growth or whatever you want to call it in terms of the industry, this is a growing industry, and it's huge. And more people are becoming addicted, and more people need treatment. And one of the things that's expanding out, too, is that with the Parity Act of Mental Health that has been put in effect in the last 5 years, actually people have more recovery programs available to them, along with not just even being put into, let's say, a counseling situation where these recovery programs are being paid for by insurance programs now. So that also gives the option for people to not just have to dip into their savings and their 401 to be able to help their children and their family members, but actually that this is being now paid for. And exponentially, the programs are becoming more sophisticated, more client-oriented, more focused in terms of the recovery process, where in the past that hadn't been the case. They would put somebody in a detox unit, maybe keep them there for 30 days, and then release them out, you know, just give them a discharge program and then no follow-up, where now we're getting a lot better at it, but unfortunately the industry is growing larger, and I see more deaths. That's part of what I see, people that just don't make it. So this is serious business. This really is. This is their life.
You know, you're in a strange position as a counselor. You're dealing with people who are sick, who have a disease, mm-hmm. I think is the appropriate term,
yeah,
if I'm
correct,
right.
Yeah.
And as a coach, you're sort of trained to look at people as whole and capable of handling their own problems. Sort mm-hmm. of two different points of view for the same individual. Does this create any problems?
Not for me. I think the difference in terms of the counseling / coaching part of it is that I validate that the client is whole. They maybe have this disease, and this disease is going to probably, as we say, is with us the rest of our life. That's why we identify as recovering, not recovered. And so if, let's say, you have diabetes and you are, you know, have to take medication every day, you're going to have to take it for the rest of your life. But the fact is that when the whole process is that we are recovering from this disease and we're getting better every day. So you don't have to be healthy to enter recovery, but what you're doing is you're creating health for yourself mentally, emotionally, physically, psychologically. And it's the same precept in terms of asking yourself questions about what seems to be appropriate behavior or appropriate ways of dealing with their problems. Whether someone is healthy and you're coaching them, they still have breakdown modes that they go through in terms of releasing some of their old behaviors and their old ways of thinking. It's the same thing in recovery. You got to break it down so that you can recreate something new.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That helps. What now? Let me ask you this, and again, I know I'm kind of straying off of our questions here, but it's such a fascinating topic, such an important topic. From your perspective, I mean, you're dealing in the field of helping people who are in trouble. What do you see, or can you talk to us about what's going on to prevent people from getting to you? I mean, you know, you're taking care of the cold after they've got
right.
it, but what's going on in our society, if you're aware of anything, to minimize the number of clients you're going to have?
I think there's a couple of things that can go on that maybe families, when their kids, I mean, you can have the drug conversation with them, but also you need to be closer to them and find out what's going on with let's say your children, for instance, that need to go into treatment or to stop that process and get them somewhere where they can get them help. A lot of kids are not heard by their parents. They're not heard by their peers a lot of times. So it's a matter of communication, and that's, you know, that's across the map as far as people are concerned. People break down in different places and parts of their lives, but in order to be aware that the person has some kind of a problem, I think that we've really laid it out on the table. There are movies, there are TV shows, there are all kinds of things that go on that put it in our face, at least to say this is a disease and that there is help available. And it's not like the stigma it was when Bill W. and Dr. Bob put the big book together of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, they were sort of underground. And even their instructions in the big book suggest that somebody that maybe comes into their AA program needs to spend a year before they can even reach out to help others. Well, fast forward in this world today is that people are talking about this. There is always somebody. One out of four persons is touched by addiction surrounding you for wherever.
Wow.
There are more clusters of this in families. It's a family disease to a certain extent. You know, it's hereditary. So it's just being aware that, first of all, that there's dysfunction going on. People are coming home excessively drunk. People are being picked up and going to court for DUIs. But making it more out in society and people being more aware that there is a place that they can get help. And I heard this 25 years ago when I entered the program and heard people say, well, you know what, you know, they're low-bottom drunks and they're high-bottom drunks. And I don't particularly like that term, but it's been used a lot, that we're trying to arrest the addiction earlier in the process, that people don't lose everything, that they don't lose their family, they don't lose their health, they don't lose their job. So, I mean, there's just more of an awareness of this. So I guess that's... And the EAP programs, the employee assistant programs, I get contact from time to time for interventions in terms of helping with an employee, a valued employee that needs some help.
You know, it would seem to me that there is a much bigger role that perhaps coaching could play in a preventive arena for this.
I would think so. And you know what? Even when I was trained in coaching, we didn't even talk about addiction. It was sort of kind of pushed aside. We don't deal with people that have addiction. And yet, even when I was training, I did some coaching at a couple of treatment centers with a couple of clients. And unfortunately, one of them went out. She disappeared. She had the wherewithal to do it, but it was not her time. The other person is still sober and is doing quite well, and this is a year and a half later. And some of the things that I did with, she was in treatment, but, you know, the lights all went on, and she's using some of the tools I've given her today, so.
Wonderful. Good for you. Well, look, let me switch gears for a second here. You know,
sure.
There's a question that we ask all of our guests, mostly because it's so fascinating, and we really have hardly ever gotten a duplicate answer here, and that's, what particular experience or key lesson did you encounter in your life that sort of has become your guiding principle, that sort of, you know, your true north, as they say, as a result of that situation? What would that be?
You know, and it plays into what I'm doing right now. there has always been someone in my life, especially when I was growing up, that took time to listen to me, took time to give me some kind of support and validation. And my guiding principle, and this plays into me working with people in recovery and people that go out and maybe never come back, and that at least I've helped plant a seed and let them know that they can live a different way, or that there is somebody there for them to be able to support them. And they don't even possibly have to reach out. They just, you know, there's always somebody there that's willing to help somebody else. And that's sort of my guiding principle, and also volunteering. I'm really big on volunteering. As a child, I mean, I started working as a volunteer in the hospitals, local hospitals here as a candy striper, and I was like 11 years old. And I basically always learned that, you know, I've got a lot to give. I've got more to give back than what I get from other people. So I guess there's kind of two guiding principles. I've had people support me in my life, and I'm sort of like paying forward, or just basically, you know, freely giving to others what, you know, has been freely given to me.
you make me chuckle, because sometimes in our own lives we have trouble figuring out, are we paying forward or are we paying back? It's a fine line.
Or sort of
line.
That karma stuff, right? From another life here.
Absolutely. What do you see as a current challenge in your coaching business these days?
You mean personally, or are you talking about the industry in general, as far as the recovery coaching? Is that what you're talking
about?
You might
guess. You can talk about both. That's wonderful.
I think there's a couple of challenges.
I'm going to let you ask the questions and answer them.
I'm sorry?
I'm going to let you ask the questions and answer them. You're doing a great job.
Okay, thanks. I think, let me kind of touch the coaching part of it first, and then sort of the recovery coaching, okay?
Okay.
Coaching, I think, is kind of a challenge today because, and I'm real big on certifications. I'm real big on education because I want to walk as I talk. And that's the reason why I became certified, you know, and spent a great deal of money and time and energy to learn and get some tools. There are a lot of people that are out in our world today that are calling themselves coaches. And I just, like, you know, rail sometimes in terms of, like, what kind of coach, where's your kid trained? Those are the kinds of things I ask. Now, there's some natural coaches that do things naturally and work in certain areas. But I see there's a lot of people out there that just have, like, a list of questions, or they've read a book, and then they think that they're able to work with people. And it concerns me, because when you start digging down deep as a coach with a client, a lot of stuff comes up. And I'm not sure that some people that are not trained are going to be able to handle those things. And I actually had somebody share with me that's at a treatment program that they actually hired a coach, and that person didn't help them at all, that they needed to go into treatment themselves. You know, so that's that fine line of, where do we put these people, and what do you, you know, how well are you qualified to do this work? And, you know, I mean, kind of, if you stay in your own sphere and you have, education and, information to convey and to work with a client, that's fine. But if you're out there just saying, I'm a coach and I'll fix anything, then that concerns me. The same thing concerns me about recovery coaching, because for a while, people didn't even, you know, you hear sober coaches being thrown around a little bit. And I think Charlie Sheen was one of them that hired a person to follow them around. And that's out there, and some people bill themselves as sober coaches, but that's not coaching. That's babysitting behavior that's still going to repeat itself. And I know that the industry I'm in has a couple of programs that do recovery coaching, and it's based more on the treatment model of actually working as a counselor and then also using coaching tools. And I think that's hopefully we're going to see more certifications go on in that area, so that we really don't do any harm to the client but actually help them. So both places I see as far as coaching, and I think that the professionals will rise above, and the ones that don't have as much training, or, you know, I think the client will eventually figure out that they are not getting what they need, or looking for something different. So
and I agree with your concern there. I'm not sure I'm on the same page that certification is the solution. I don't see anything wrong with certification. I mean, I'm a certified coach. The education helped me tremendously. I don't know that the certification did, if you know what I mean there.
Right, right.
But at the same time, I think that if you look at any professional service field, whether you're talking about a coach, an architect, an engineer, an attorney, there's people that have passed the regulations, performed the tests, that are no good at what they're doing and can do harm. And so I think it becomes the client's responsibility to really evaluate, are they getting what they wanted? And I think the same way that today I think people are taking a more active role in their own health care, that they're not just sitting back and doing whatever the doctor says, but they're maybe getting two doctors' opinions and maybe doing research. I would say that our coaching clients and maybe your recovery families need to do the same thing. They need to do their due diligence on who they're hiring and set out the boundaries and follow up to make sure that they are getting proper services delivered to them. I don't know that you could. I don't know that the certification automatically guarantees you, but I think it's a good point. I think you're right on in identifying an area of to be watchful in.
I think so too. I guess they use the term certification for other than, I guess, qualified to be able to do the work, you know, and being trained. I don't know. I came from an era in business where they did a lot of training. I did a lot of technical work over the years, and you know, I also took you know, selling courses and stuff, and training courses, management courses, and I went on and got a couple of advanced degrees and whatnot. But I feel that I'm always open to learning new things. And so if there's, you know, if it's not a certification, it's at least a set of tools or a toolbox so that when you are working with the client, you've got something to take out of that box to be able to help them or guide them. And also guide yourself, too, in terms of, you know, what you want to get accomplished with the client. So, you know, I mean, that's what a continuing education is all about. You know, there's always a focus on that. With my CAS certification, I have to have 20 hours every year. And ethics and confidentiality gets emphasized every year on that. So, like you said, I mean, anybody can you know, go to school and do things. But I think some of the things that we're talking about have to have a little more heart in them. I think that working as a coach and also working in recovery, you have to have a heart to do this. I think you have to have something to be able to help people and maybe go the extra mile.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. But I want to make the point that I think it's a responsibility that the consumer, the client, has to take upon themselves to verify that the person they're hiring is qualified and can perform. You know, it kind of reminds me, I can't think of the name of the movie that Tom Hanks played the role in, and he was a poser. He was a pilot and a doctor, and he filled all these roles and never had any training in any of them, you know,
right.
And... I think that we're looking at the same thing in coaching, maybe even in your counseling area, that the clients need to take responsibility to do their due diligence and make sure they're getting what they need.
Well, I agree. I actually ask my clients, you know, what they did, what do they see, you know, how do they even see this, you know, in terms of the process of what they're doing. And I think you're absolutely right. I think that we can't take things for face value in today's world, although we've got a lot more available to us. And, you know, we have a lot of data available to us to be able to make a decision. You know, again, you're right. You're right. And I think that in all circumstances, also the client has an opportunity to say there's not, you know, there's not the right kind of chemistry here. And, you know, that can happen too. And, you know, you also have to be available to say, well, okay, then maybe you need to go on to do something else. But you're right. They, in order to participate, they need to know what they're getting into and how much work and responsibility they need to take for the process, too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So Sandra, let's talk a minute about definitions. How do you? What's the definition of coaching that you use? So many people mix up training and mentoring with coaching, and you've kind of added another one I hadn't thought of. That's counselor.
Yeah.
What do you say about definitions? What's your definition of coaching?
Sort of put me on the spot. I clarified it that that coaching is not therapy, although I do a little bit of the medical or the social model process that I do in working with clients. But coaching I see as really helping a client open those doors that they maybe have shut to themselves or not even thought about opening in their lives. And I think coaching is an enriching, expansive program, not without pain and tears and a lot of work. Coaching is maybe opening the doors to your inner self that you haven't even looked at for a long time, and to enrich their lives, to be better at who they are, or to even become who they are, where people might not even know who they are. They've done all these things around them, but they're not happy within themselves, and they want to make some changes. So I don't know if that's a definition. It's a process, I think, is what it is.
Okay, well, I think that's a good definition. Well, look, as we get ready to wrap up here, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to, or something that I sort of interrupted and you want to add a little more to the conversation?
Gosh, I don't think so. I hope that I've explained, what I do and what my particular coaching model is and or business model, as you had asked. I hope that your audience and you come away with kind of an idea of what this process is. And, it's a gift for anybody that's been struggling with addiction and problems.
Would you encourage coaches to follow your business model?
Yes, if they're working with people on a social and personal level, yes.
Well, look, Sandra, last question, how does someone get in touch with you to learn more about your services? So
okay,
let's
well,
tell our audience how they can find you.
All right. Well, my telephone number is 714-747-5420. And I have a partial website up right now, which is freshstartlifecoach.net. And my email is sandralldavidson@sbcglobal.net. Again, that's sandralldavidson@sbcglobal.net.
Okay. Sandra, thank you very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. And welcome to the community of guests on the Coaching Perspective.
Thank you very much, Doug.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, we've been listening to Sandra Davidson, life coach, counselor working in the area of recovery and addiction. We haven't had that on the show before. That's a whole different spin. Certainly provided me with a lot of information that I was not familiar with. So that was great. If you tuned in late, be sure to go to the website and listen to the show. We'll have it posted up there on Monday or Tuesday of next week, and you can listen to it and also browse around and listen to some of the other great guests that we've had. So thank you for being with us. We're live here every Thursday, 4 p.m., octalkradio.net. And this is Doug Gefeller signing off, telling you that I hope you've enjoyed the show today and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to the one show that looks at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller, right here on octalkradio.net.